Yeah. Good morning. One quick introductory question. Is the Torah addressed to evil people? I think Gemara sometimes has that question in a few places. V'chibur Shia, Askina, who's the target audience of the Torah? Are we addressing ourselves to evil people? The assumption is that we're not. So then the question is, Pasuk in this past week's parsha, in the second of this past week's parsha is in Parsha's Kedoshim. So we have a mitzvah in the Torah where we're told, Lifnei Iver lo sitein mitchel. We're instructed not to put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Somebody who can't see will trip over a rock that we intentionally placed there. So that prompts the question, who exactly is the target audience of the Torah? Are we talking to people who thought beforehand this was a good idea? This is the kind of activity that upstanding people engage in. And now we have a chiddush. The Torah comes and says, by the way, you should just know that in addition to everything else we've been telling you, and after we've already told you, kedoshim to you and all of that, you should also know that putting a rock with the intentional goal of causing a blind person to trip is not recommended. So it's hard to believe that that's the case. And indeed, we find from Chazal that there are at least two other interpretations to what this pasuk is telling us. There are at least two other prohibited activities that seem to be included in this pasuk. On the one hand, the Midrashim tell us, the Torah's Kohanim teach us that there is a prohibition to give somebody bad advice. Now, if the prohibition were to unknowingly give bad advice, we'd all probably be in a lot of trouble. Now, presumably we're talking about knowingly give somebody bad advice. If somebody is unaware of the facts that he needs to know in order to proceed with a wise decision, and somebody wants to buy a house, and you're interested in him buying this house because you're friends with a real estate agent and you want him to get the commission. So you tell him, yeah, you should buy this house, it'll be wonderful for you, you'll love it, it's going to be great. And you don't mention the fact that there's no floor, and you fall right through to the ground, and there's no rooms, and it's not even a real house, it's just a prop. And a lot of the major gaping flaws in the house, you don't tell him, because you're interested in him buying the house so that he'll help out your friend, the real estate agent. So according to Chazal, this is a violation of Lifnei Iver lo sitein mitchel. That this individual is considered to be, figuratively speaking, an Iver in this case. He doesn't have all the information that he needs to walk without tripping. And you are pushing him further along the path, causing him to stumble, is a violation of Lifnei Iver lo sitein mitchel. In addition, the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah and Maseches Psachim, which appears on the Ma'amar Koma sheets, tells us another level of Lifnei Iver lo sitein mitchel. The Gemara teaches that if you help somebody in committing a transgression, that puts you in violation of Lifnei Iver lo sitein mitchel. The Gemara gives two very unusual examples, not the first kind of examples that would come to mind. One example is if somebody is a Nazir. Somebody has taken a vow of Nazirus, and therefore he's not allowed to drink wine, but he wants wine anyway. So you're going to help him out, you're going to give him the wine, that means you're in violation of Lifnei Iver lo sitein mitchel. The Gemara gives another example, also a little bit of an unusual example, perhaps to make the point that we're not only prohibited from causing Jews to stumble, but there's a prohibition that applies to the whole world. So the Gemara seems to go out of its way to give an example that applies to a non-Jew. And the Gemara says there's a prohibition we know of Eiver Menachai. Eiver Menachai is one of the food prohibitions that applies to the whole world. Most kashrus really only applies to Jews, but nobody's allowed to eat Eiver Menachai, the limb of a living animal. So the Gemara says, if you're going to take the limb of a living animal and give it to a non-Jew to eat, that will put you again in violation of Lifnei Iver lo sitein mitchel. To help out with a sin, to help somebody perform a transgression, that again is a violation of this pasuk. And we'll just take a minute to discuss some of the important details of that prohibition. The Gemara explains that there is an aspect there to be aware of, that one only is in violation of Lifnei Iver lo sitein mitchel, as the Gemara in Avodah Zarah teaches, in a situation that the Gemara calls Trei Avra Denara. Trei Avra Denara means literally two sides of the river, and it describes a circumstance where the individual who wants to sin, the Nazir who wants to drink wine, and somebody who wants to eat the Eiver Menachai is on one side of a river, and his desired item is on the other side of the river. And that's where I am. So he's not capable of doing it without my help. He needs me to bring him the wine from across the river. He needs me to bring him the Avram and Achai from the other side of the river. So I am a crucial part of the process. If I don't bring it to him, he will not be able to commit the transgression. So the Gemara says it's only in that kind of a circumstance where you have a biblical violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol. If it's a circumstance of Chad Avra Denara, Chad Avra Denara meaning one side of the river, in other words, everybody's all together in one place, so he could easily get the item himself. But he doesn't want to get up, so he asks me to pass it to him. But if I wasn't there, he would still commit transgression. He would do it on his own. I'm just making it a little bit easier. So strictly speaking, that's not a biblical violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol. But the Rishonim point out, Rishonim beginning in Masechta Shabbos and Rishonim in Avodah Zarah, all explain that there is an Issa D'Rabbanan. The Issa D'Rabbanan is termed Misayeya Lidei Ovrei Aveira, somebody who is helping out those who commit a transgression. And it's not our topic for today to analyze Misayeya, but I'll just mention parenthetically that there is some discussion in Achronim, what is the nature of Misayeya? Misayeya may be simply a rabbinical version of Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol, that on a level min HaTorah, Lifnei Iver only applies if you are crucial to the process, and on a level Midraban, it applies even if you're not crucial, if you're just helping out. Or it could be this is a completely separate idea. It could be this is related to another pasuk in this past week's parasha, that we have a mitzvah in yesterday's parasha of Tochacha, that if somebody's doing the wrong thing, so you're supposed to set them straight. You're supposed to give them musr. Now the Gemara says that nowadays they don't really know how to do it properly, and there are all kinds of limitations. You're not supposed to do it in a way that's going to cause embarrassment. You're not supposed to do it in a way that's not going to be received well. So there are all kinds of limitations on the mitzvah of Tochacha. And the Gemara says that already in the time of the Gemara, we no longer know how to properly perform the mitzvah of Tochacha. So one could question whether or not there's an active aspect of Tochacha. But at the very least, if you're helping with the sin, if you're saying, yeah, sure, here's the cheeseburger, go enjoy, so that certainly seems to be counter to the spirit of Tochacha. So some suggest that Misayeya is not necessarily about Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver is only when you're crucial to the process. But this is a different Din D'Rabbanan. This is something that matches more closely with the obligation of Tochacha. But in any case, that's just to get some of the details out, that strictly speaking, it only applies when you're absolutely crucial to the process. When you're not crucial to the process, it's still not appropriate to help out, either because of some D'Rabbanan of Lifnei Iver, or because it's not in the spirit of Tochacha, or for whatever combination of reasons. There is an Issa D'Rabbanan, but strictly speaking, the mitzvah min HaTorah, the prohibition min HaTorah, means you are crucial to the process. So what do we see so far? So we have basically three ways to interpret this pasuk. On the one hand, there is the shocking suggestion that the Jewish people would otherwise indulge in putting rocks in front of blind people, and that we have to be told not to do that. On the other hand, there is the prohibition of giving bad advice, and then there is a prohibition of helping with the transgression. The truth is, there is even a minority view, and some Rishonim quote, and the Menachas Chinuch has a discussion about this, the Mitzvah Reish Lamed Beis, that the last two prohibitions are actually the real interpretations, and the first interpretation is the literal translation is so shocking it's not even true. It's not even really talking about putting a rock in front of a blind person. Clearly speaking, if you would do that, that's going to put you in violation of many other principles of the Torah, but that's not at all what this pasuk is talking about. The pasuk is only talking about giving bad advice or helping somebody to commit a transgression. So others will counter, how could that be? We have a principle, Ein Mikra Yotze Midei Pshuto, that even when there are additional interpretations, the literal interpretation is always true. So Menachas Chinuch quotes the discussion about this, that maybe that's not the literal interpretation, maybe the pasuk would have been phrased differently if that were the literal interpretation. There's a discussion about that. But for our purposes, let's assume that all three of these constitute violations of Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol. So working with that assumption, I'd like to ask a certain basic question, and I think a lot of other issues in Lifnei Iver flow out of this question. That you'll see the Achronim have two or three major questions that they talk about in trying to define the prohibition of Lifnei Iver, and we'll try to look at those questions. But I think all of the questions that you could ask tie into each other, and they all trace back to a certain basic question. And the certain basic question is as follows. We see here three prohibitions and one pasuk. So how does this work? On the one hand, you could say that Torah Shebaal Peh teaches us additional prohibitions that are tied to the pasuk. The pasuk is interpreted in three different ways, three different issues that all are derived from one pasuk. Or you could say that's not what's going on. You could say that we're dealing here really with one prohibition. Torah is only saying one thing. It happens to be, it's applied broadly in many different arenas. Now, perhaps what the Torah is simply saying is, in a broad sense, one is not permitted to take advantage of somebody's disadvantage in order to hurt them. And that applies in a lot of different arenas. It applies in the physical arena. If a person can't see what's in front of him, so you can't make him hurt himself. It applies, let's say, in the financial arena. If somebody's going to make a bad financial decision, you can't push them further along that path by giving them misinformation. And it applies in the spiritual arena. If somebody has a temptation to sin, so you can't push them further along that path by giving them the instrument of Aveira. So it could be that we don't have three prohibitions here. We have one concept. There's one broadly phrased prohibition, which is applied in different arenas. And I think that fundamental question is really what's beneath the surface of a lot of other issues that Achronim work on in determining how to understand the prohibition with Nivra L'Sitim Mishnah. Just right off the bat, I'll mention that there is an issue that Rishonim and Achronim discuss that it seems to be agreed upon, that even though you have a lav in the Torah, you have a prohibition in the Torah, los tasei, nonetheless, there is no punishment of malchus here. Normally you have a prohibition in the Torah, so there's a punishment of malchus, and that's true for every single prohibition in the Torah, with hundreds of exceptions. And there are many exceptions, and there are many categories of exceptions. If something is non-active, a lav shein bo maisa, if it's something that can be fixed, lav nitak lasei, or can be paid back, nitan eishavon, there are many different exceptions to the rule. So everyone seems to agree that lifnei iver is subject to one of the exceptions, but they don't agree on what the exception is. So everyone agrees that there's no malchus for lifnei iver. The question is, why not? So the Kesef Mishnah, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, suggests in his commentary to the Rambam that the category that's relevant here is what's called lav shebeklalos. If you're learning a daf yomi, this came up in the Maseches Pesachim a few months ago. Lav shebeklalos basically means if you have one pasuk and it's interpreted to mean several different yisurim, so then there's no malchus. Either there's no malchus for any of them, or some Rishonim understand there's no malchus for the additional yisurim beyond the pshat, that there is for the pasuk pshat but not for anything on top of that. So here the Kesef Mishnah seems to be saying, the first side explicitly, that lifnei iver is a pasuk that is interpreted in several different ways. And the reason there's no malchus is because we're dealing with additional levels of interpretation. So that would be the first way to look at things, that basically we have a pasuk here that tells us three distinct yisurim. While alternatively, we could say it's not a lav shebeklalos. There's only one idea here. There's one prohibition which happens to have a lot of different arenas. So it's like saying, don't have basu b'chalav. Don't have basu b'chalav in McDonald's. Don't have it in Burger King, and don't have it in Wendy's. That's not three separate yisurim. That's one different. That's one idea that's going to apply in every single arena in which it comes up. So how does this affect the other issues that are dealt with? So to begin with, one of the primary issues that the Achronim talk about, an issue that's clearly lying there in Rishonim as well, is the following question. So what exactly goes on? If I commit the Aveira of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol, let's say I invite you over to my house for dinner and I serve you pork. So what exactly happened? So clearly I did something wrong. And you ate the pork and I did something wrong. So what did I do wrong? So there are those who would suggest, this is a strong voice like this, there are those who would suggest that what did I do wrong? That I violated the issur of eating pork. What are you talking about? I've never had pork in my life. So some say that lifnei iver is interpreted as an accessory principle, which is in American law. If I help somebody commit a crime, if I drive the getaway car, so even though I didn't actually commit the crime myself, but I'm a crucial aspect of the process, so I could be charged with bank robbery also. If I drove the getaway car, I'm also charged with bank robbery. I didn't go into the bank, I didn't take any of the money, but the crime was committed through my vital assistance, that's as if I did it. I'm an accessory, it's considered to be as if I committed the crime myself. So maybe the halacha has the same principle. Maybe if I make this avera possible, it's as if I committed it myself. Maybe that's the chiddush. And as we'll see, a number of Rishonim and a number of Achronim seem to believe that that was the case. Well, others say that's not what's going on at all. But no, he violated eating treif, and I violated something else. I violated lifnei ivur lo sitein michshol. It's a separate offense. It's not the same thing. Now, you find this manifested in a lot of different issues. A lot of Rishonim discuss different points which touch upon this. We'll just mention one or two where it comes out and where it makes a difference. For example, it makes a difference in the area of Shabbos. If you help somebody to violate Shabbos, so does that make you into a Machal Shabbos? If you yourself have never violated Shabbos, but you have helped somebody to be Machal Shabbos, does that put you in the position of being a Machal Shabbos? Which is an important question because there are ramifications of the halacha. For example, there is a concept in halacha called a mummer. A mummer is somebody who regularly violates halacha to the point where he's basically made a statement he doesn't believe it exists, doesn't believe it's binding. So normally the halacha says the mummer is a localized concept. If you're a mummer for a certain avera, so then you have that status vis-a-vis that avera, and not for other things. But Shabbos is the exception. Somebody who is a mummer for Shabbos is considered to be a mummer for the whole Torah. So Rabbi Akiva Eger, in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, raises the question, so what would be if you're a mummer for Shabbos? Let's say you never violate Shabbos in your life, but you regularly help people violate Shabbos. So does that make you a mummer for Shabbos? Or do we say, no, you're not a mummer for Shabbos. You never violated Shabbos. You're a mummer for Lifnei Iver, which is a localized concept. And it doesn't affect your status vis-a-vis Shabbos and Kol Torah Kula. So this seems to be an issue. So it could be a real case. Actually, it could be a very practical case, because if you think about it a little bit, you can think of a lot of scenarios like that. But there are a lot of ways to do it. I'll just mention one issue that Rishonim debate. You can think of some examples on your own, but I'll just mention an issue that Rishonim debate, the first mission of Masechta Shabbos. If you learn the first mission of Masechta Shabbos, so the Mishnah talks about carrying. So it gives all kinds of scenarios. It talks about somebody comes to your house and he asks for money on Shabbos. So Mishnah talks about all the different permutations. If he sticks his hand in the house and you put something in his hand and he takes it out, or if you stick your hand outside and he's outside, he puts it in his hand, all kinds of different complicated permutations. So the Mishnah says, you do it one way, you're both violating Shabbos. You do it one way, one guy's violating Shabbos, the other guy isn't. So Rishonim asks, well, how could you ever have a scenario where one individual here is violating Shabbos and the other isn't? If you're helping him violate Shabbos, so then you should by definition also be in trouble. Don't we have a principle, lifnei iver lo sitein michshol? So how could you ever have a scenario where two people are doing something together, each one is a vital part of the process, and one is in violation of Shabbos and the other one isn't? That's the question Rishonim asked, Tosfos and the Ran ask in the beginning of Masechta Shabbos. So you have two types of answers. Some Rishonim work to find a way in which lifnei iver is technically not being violated in order to address the question. While others say, it's not a problem. Yeah, you could be in violation of lifnei iver, but that's not our subject. We're not learning Masechta lifnei iver when we start Masechta Shabbos. We're talking about Masechta Shabbos. So all we want to know is Hilchos Shabbos being violated? If you're violating lifnei iver, that's a problem. You have to deal with that, but that's not the theme of the mission. So these two different approaches, as later Achronim spell out, represent two different ways of looking at lifnei iver. The Rishonim who find it necessary to find a way that lifnei iver doesn't apply in this case, and there are a lot of exceptions to lifnei iver, which is how you're able to do that, so they seem to be assuming that if lifnei iver did apply, we'd have a problem. Because lifnei iver basically would make you an accessory, would make you also somebody violating Shabbos, and that would make the Mishnah scenario impossible. So therefore, in order for the Mishnah to make sense, we have to find a way that lifnei iver is not relevant in this case. While other Rishonim aren't bothered by it because they feel lifnei iver is its own prohibition. So if lifnei iver is its own prohibition, so then we don't have to worry about that in Masechta Shabbos. Yes, maybe there is a violation of lifnei iver, and maybe that's your own problem. But as far as the laws of Malacha, this is not something that we're talking about right now. So this issue is already touched upon in Rishonim, and Achronim discussed this along the lines we've been discussing. And they suggest that this would then have ramifications, for example, for Bekiva Eger's issue of Mummer. Are you considered to be in violation of Shabbos, or are you considered to be in violation of Lufnei Iver, which has more localized consequences? There are many other issues you find like this in Rishonim. We'll just mention another one which has very major consequences. We know that there are some prohibitions that carry a much bigger price tag than others. For example, the three prohibitions that are under the category of Yehareg Val Yavar. There are three prohibitions that the Torah says that one is not permitted to violate, even at the expense of your own life. But normally the rule is, if somebody puts a gun to your head and says, eat non-kosher food or violate the Shabbos, so normally the rule is, Yavor V'al Yehareg, you should do the Avera and not let yourself get killed. We say, V'chai Behem, you have to protect your life. But if it's one of, quote-unquote, the big three, which are comprised of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry, of Shfichas Damim, of murder, or of Gilui Arayos, of sexual morality, if it's one of these big three, so then the halacha is Yehareg V'al Yavor. One is required to let himself be killed rather than to violate these prohibitions. So this prompts a very practical question then. So what if somebody puts you in a position where they're not actually asking you to violate one of these three prohibitions, but they're asking you to help? They're asking you to be a vital part of one of these prohibitions. So then what? If you're told to be violent via violation of Ne'ibra Lo Sitein Mitchell for, let's say, idolatry, or this person will kill you, what do you do? So here also you seem to find the machlokas Rishonim. You seem to find the machlokas between the Balamor and the Ramban and other Rishonim, as it appears in Maseches Sanhedrin and Dafayin Dalet. The context there is a little complicated, so we won't go into all the details. But it basically emerges that you have a machlokas Rishonim on this question, with some assuming that this has a status of Yehareg Val Yavor, and others saying, no, but that's called Lifnei Iver, and that's not called one of the big three. And Lifnei Iver doesn't have a rule of Yehareg Val Yavor. And that's actually the way the Ramah paskins, the Ramah in Hilchos Avodah Zarah and Kufnan Zayin, it's on the Maror Mekomeshit, writes that if it's a situation of Lifnei Iver by Yehareg Val Yavor, one is not required to give up his life rather than violate Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mitchel. So this again seems to be an example of the same question. Does Lifnei Iver tell us that you are an accessory in the crime, you are committing the crime yourself at the same time? Or do we say, no, it's a localized idea, it's Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mitchel, and it's not the actual crime that you are facilitating? So that question, which again is a popular one in Achronim and is discussed in many different places in many different details, I think one could suggest that that issue actually traces itself back to the question that we started with. How do we understand the three prohibitions that come out of the Pasuk with the Iver Lo Sitein Mitchel? Are they three distinct prohibitions, or are they all one big interpretation broadly applied? I think if you want to say that there's the accessory idea going on, that when I help somebody do an Aveira, it's as if I'm doing it myself, then you're forced to say that we're dealing here with three distinct prohibitions. Because if you're talking about one broad idea, so then everything would have to follow the model of the initial prohibition. What's the initial prohibition? So you can't put a rock in front of a blind person to cause him to stumble and physically hurt himself. Now, if we look at that model, would anyone have a question as to what's the nature of that issue? Would anyone not understand what that's about? It's clear what that's about. It's about hurting a human being. Nobody would suggest, well, the reason that's prohibited is because if I trip somebody and he falls, it's as if I myself fall, and it's as if I also get hurt. And clearly, that's not what's going on there. So if we're going to say that it's all one big idea, so then they all would have to follow that model, that the nature of the prohibition of helping somebody to sin is not that I'm engaging the prohibition myself. It's that I'm getting him in trouble upstairs. It's that now because he commits this sin, so now he's suffering spiritually, and I have contributed to his suffering, just like I contributed to the physical suffering if I trip somebody. So I contributed to his spiritual suffering by helping him sin. But if I want to say that it's like I'm sinning myself, so that's clearly divergent from the physical model of the pasuk. And therefore you're forced to say that it's three distinct prohibitions, it's not one broad idea. You find this idea reflected as well in the Tshuvos of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Ligros Moshe, discusses the question, and other Achronim discuss also, how do we categorize Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol? Is it talking about the version of helping somebody sin? This prohibition of helping somebody to sin, do we see that as an Avera ben Adam l'makom, or an Avera ben Adam l'chavero? And that's a question that flows right out of the general question that the Achronim are dealing with. That if you say it's an accessory, so then it appears, assuming we're talking about a ben Adam l'makom that you're helping, that you're also in violation of a ben Adam l'makom. So basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't want you to eat pork, and I don't want you to help. That helping is as if you're doing it. So somebody who is an accessory to an Aveir ben Adam l'makom is also committing an Aveir ben Adam l'makom himself. But if we say the other interpretation, maybe it's really to be understood as a ben Adam l'chavero, that the person eating the pork, he's violating the Aveir ben Adam l'makom. But your crime is not that you're eating pork, because you're not eating pork. Your crime is that you're causing this guy to suffer spiritually. So therefore your offense is against him, and it's a ben Adam l'chavero, which again would follow more closely the model of the first prohibition. You're causing him to get hurt by putting a rock in front of him, which is clearly a ben Adam l'chavero. So simply put, the first model is clearly a ben Adam l'chavero. So if it's all one big prohibition, then we're all talking about ben Adam l'chaveros. But if we're saying that it's a ben Adam l'makom, so then we have to diverge from the model and say that we're talking about different prohibitions that come from the same pasuk. What difference does it make if it's ben Adam l'chaveiro or ben Adam l'makom? So the difference that comes to mind initially is that of mechila. And we know the Mishnah tells us in Yuma that if somebody has committed an aveira ben Adam l'chaveiro, so he wants to repent, so it's not enough to go to the shul on Yom Kippur and to fast and to daven and to cry, but you have to ask for forgiveness from the person who you hurt. So that could actually be complicated in the area of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol. Somebody once pointed out that this could be another application of a famous dispute between Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Chafetz Chaim. It's an interesting historical point, just mentioned quickly, that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was the towering figure of Musar in the 1800s, and he was an older contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim wrote the classic work on the laws of Lashon Hara. So one would think that Rabbi Saul Talanter would be a very big fan of this book, and he was, but nonetheless he refused to write a Haskama. He wouldn't recommend in writing the book Chafetz Chaim. And they asked him, why not? It's a great book. And he said, yeah, it is a great book, but I can't recommend it because there's one ruling in there that I disagree with. I can't put my name on. So he said to him, Rabbi, you should write the Haskama anyway, and you'll write in your letter that, by the way, on page 310 there's something I disagree with. So he says, no, I'm not going to do that because nobody reads the Haskamas anyway. So they'll see my stationery, they'll see my letter, they'll think I agree with everything in the book, and they won't know that I think this one ruling is very problematic. So what was the one ruling that Rabbi Saul Talanter felt he can't sign his name to? It sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim, there's some discussion if he meant it this way, but it sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim that if you spoke Lashon Hara about somebody and he doesn't know, he's blissfully ignorant. Nonetheless, you have to ask mechila from him anyway, even though doing so means that you have to tell him what you said and hurt his feelings. So he's much happier if you don't tell him, and yet you have to tell him in order to get mechila. That's what it sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim, assuming that he means it in that blatant way. So Rabbi Saul Talanter thought, God forbid, there's a prohibition of anas devarim. You're not allowed to hurt somebody's feelings. So to say you're going to violate another transgression in order to get mechila for your first transgression, that seems to be very counterproductive. So Rabbi Saul Talanter said, you're here, you're going to have to violate anas devarim in order to get forgiven. It doesn't justify it. It's not permissible to do that. So somebody once pointed out, one of the students here once pointed out, that this is another case in which that comes up. Here's another opportunity to look at the question of anas devarim versus getting mechila. Because let's say I invite you to my house for Pesach, and I serve you chametz. If I violate this Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol, I'll give you chametz and Pesach. And then comes Shavuos, and I stay up all night learning, and you stay up all night learning, and you learn that you're not supposed to eat chametz and Pesach. So you realize that was a bad idea. So you do tshuva gemura, you repent completely, you're never going to eat chametz and Pesach again. So then comes Erev Yom Kippur, I want to ask Mechila. So if it's a Ben Adam L'Chavera when I have to ask Mechila, so I'm going to call you up and say, remember on Pesach when I gave you Chametz and you ate it and you had such a good time eating Chametz on Pesach? So I was in violation of Rosh Yivra L'Sitein Mechshol, and I hope you'll forgive me. So the Mishnah says explicitly in Bav Metziah that to remind somebody of their transgressions that they have repented for, they've done tshuva for, is a violation of an Anas Dvarim. So here's another circumstance where I would have to violate an Anas Dvarim in order to ask Mechila. So this would also be subject to that machlokas, the Chafetz Chaim Rebbe Yisrael Salanter, does asking for Mechila justify violating an Anas Dvarim? So it's another arena in which this comes up. Hi? I'm Rabbeinu Yonah. Right.
That's true. I don't see how
Rabbi Yisrael argued with the Rishon. So you have to read the art scroll book. The art scroll book about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the Rav Aaron Cutler was asked the same question. And I think I saw it there as a kid. The Rav Aaron Cutler was asked this question. How could Rabbi Yisrael Salanter come and argue on Rabbeinu Yonah? And apparently his response was that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter tanahu upalik. It's an expression you find from the Gemara, Rav Tanhu Palig, that even though you live, even the certain Yechidim who live in later generations are on such a level that they can argue on the earlier generations. Apparently, Rav Aaron Cutler thought that Rav Saul Salanter was on such a level that he was able to argue on Rabbeinu Yonah. But in any case, that's not so much our topic. But in any case, that would be another possible ramification of saying that we're dealing here with a Ben Adam L'Chaveru, as opposed to interpreting as Ben Adam L'Machom, which would require seeing things in a somewhat different light. So this is another question that the Achronim ask. This is a separate question, but this also ties into the previous question, which I think also ties into our first initial question. And this question was popularized by a sefer called Yad Malachi. All the later Achronim who talk about this attribute this question to Yad Malachi, but it's a popular discussion that you find throughout. Yad Malachi is a sefer of Klolim, talks about different principles in learning. So he's the one who made this question really famous. And it sounds like a very technical question, but you'll see in a second that it has major ramifications. Let's say I give you a pork sandwich at 12 o'clock today. I give you a pork sandwich for lunch. And you decide you don't have time to eat lunch now, you're going to take it with you, and you don't actually eat the pork sandwich until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So when did I violate Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol? Did I violate it when I gave you the sandwich at 12 o'clock? Or did I violate it when you ate the sandwich at 3 o'clock? You'll say again, it's a technicality. Who cares whether it happened at 12 or whether it happened at 3? I'll tell you how it can make a very big difference. What if you change your mind in between 12 and 3? What if you decide never to eat the pork sandwich? So am I still in violation? Am I in violation by the very act of putting the michshol there, regardless of whether or not you trip? Or am I only in violation if you actively commit the crime? And this is something that really does trace back to the previous question, because if the idea is that I'm joining in on your Avera, so then it would seem that I only do that if you actually commit the Avera. If you don't commit the Avera, so I dodged the bullet. I basically got out of trouble here. But if the idea is, again, more closely based on the initial model, I place a rock there, regardless of whether he trips or not, I'm still in violation of the Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol, because it's the michshol that's the issue, not the tripping. So then, if I give you the sandwich, it doesn't make a difference whether you actually eat or not, assuming that you're vulnerable. You know, if I confiscate the pork sandwich from a student and I give it to the Rosh Hashiva to watch, we wouldn't call that Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol because I'm giving the sandwich to the Rosh Hashiva. But if somebody who's vulnerable, somebody who's likely to eat it, but happens not to eat it, I may still be in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. So this is a question that Yad Malachi himself and others try to bring different proofs from one place or another. There are a lot of Gemaras that give you different impressions on this question. So if you try to bring proofs from Shas, you find a couple proofs in different directions. For example, the Gemara says in Bav Metziah that this is a good question. Halacha post can discuss why people aren't makbid on this halacha, and maybe they should be makbid on this halacha. That's a discussion post can talk about. But it says in the Gemara in Bav Metziah that if you lend money without witnesses, so that's a violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. As Rashi explains, why is that true? Because as soon as you lend money without witnesses, the guy can think, all right, you know what, nobody knows what happened here. If I deny it, it's going to be my word against his, no one will know, so I can keep the money. Now, it's not suggested there that I'm only in violation if he actually does keep the money. So the implication there seems to be that the Mechshol itself is a problem, regardless of whether or not an Aveira actually takes place. You find this elsewhere. Gemara Masechet Kedushin talks about somebody who wants to test his son, see if he's going to be respectful to him. And here the Gemara seems to give the other impression, because the Gemara says that he was going to tear up silk in front of his son's silk, and see if his son would get upset at him or not. And then the Gemara says, well, maybe he will get upset, and then he'll be in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mitzvah. So that's the implication the other way. It seems to imply that only if the Aveira actually happens, so then he's in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mitzvah. But then to flip back, the Gemara in Moed Katan gives you an indication the other way. Because there the Gemara in Moed Katan says that a parent, also in the context of Kibbut Aveim, the Gemara says that a parent should not strike their child who's an adult. The definition of an adult is an interesting question here. Of a certain age, a parent should not strike the child, because the child will be tempted to hit back, which is a big aveira. So the assumption there seems to be that the act of hitting already is lifnei iver, regardless of what happens afterwards. So if you try to bring proofs from the Gemara, you find a lot of proofs in different directions. So it's a little bit of a question how to conclusively rule on this issue. But the question does seem to trace itself back to our earlier issues, that if I am taking part in the Aveira, so then maybe I'm only in trouble if the Aveira actually happens. But if it's more based on the model of the physical Lifnei Iver, so then the Michshol is the problem, regardless of what happens later. So this kind of can reverberate in a couple of different arenas. The Nosei Kelim on the side of the Shulchan Aruch all quote the position from the Amunah Shmuel. Amunah Shmuel is a sefer of Tshuvas, and Nosei Kelim quote this view, and it's a big discussion whether or not he's correct. The Amunah Shmuel writes that if I help somebody to commit a transgression, but the transgression happens not to apply to me, for whatever reason, it only applies to him, it doesn't apply to me, so the Amunah Shmuel says, I am not in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mitzvah under those circumstances. Now you might ask, but what about the Gemara's case about Nazir? Right? The Gemara says that if I help a Nazir drink, so I'm in violation of Lifnei Iver, and who says that I'm a Nazir? There's no implication in that Gemara that I'm a Nazir. So you could be exact. The Amunah Shmuel himself already picked up on that, and he already includes this in his formulation. The truth is, the rules of Nazir do apply to me, because if I take upon an oath of Naziris, it's going to become relevant. Right now it's not, because I'm not currently a Nazir, but at any time I can take upon myself the rules of Naziris, and the rules are, in theory, relevant to me. So that question he gets out of. But in theory, he says, if you have a prohibition that doesn't apply to me, like, for example, say a Kohen marrying a Grusha, so if a Kohen's going to have somebody help him marry a Grusha, and the person who's helping is not himself a Kohen, so it's a machlokas rishonim, actually, in Bav Metzia and Daf Yud, whether or not there's a issue of lifnei iver lo sitein mitzvah in such a case. So the Amunah Shmuel would say there isn't, because the one doing the helping is not subject to that prohibition. And many others disagree. So it seems to be that this is also relevant to the previous question. Because if one takes the view that you're joining in on the Aveira, so then it could be that if the Aveira doesn't apply to you, it doesn't matter. You can afford to join in on the Aveira, because the Aveira is not something that you can violate. But if the issue is that you're helping him to get in trouble, so then it doesn't matter that it doesn't apply to you. The fact is, you are tripping him up, and it's wholly irrelevant whether that issue would apply to you directly or not. This also perhaps comes up in another question that the Rishonim discuss and Achronim discuss at length also, the question of how does Lifnei Iver interact when the Isser involved is an Isser Drabanan. If you're going to help somebody do an Isser Drabanan, so what does that say about you? What have you violated? So there are at least three different views in Rishonim on this topic. There are those who say there isn't any issue, the Lifnei Iver is purely as far as Isserim Daraisa. There are those who say that there is a violation, there's a violation of Lifnei Iver Min HaTorah. And there are others who say there is a violation of Lifnei Iver, but you can't call Lifnei Iver Min HaTorah, because you're helping somebody do a Derabbanan. And we have a principle in Halacha, Shlo Yehei Tafel Chamer Min HaIkar, that the secondary thing shouldn't be more severe than the primary thing. So how could it be that you're helping him do something, and you're doing something worse than what he's doing? So it must be that if he's doing a Derabbanan, you're also only doing a worse Derabbanan. You can only be doing as bad a thing as he's doing. So it seems to be that this question is also informed by this previous issue. that some of these perspectives reflect some of the points we've been making, that if you believe that you're joining in on the Avera, so then, again, this last position is right. It would seem you can only be as doing as bad an Avera as he's doing. If he's doing a Drabbanan, then you could be doing it worse to Drabbanan. Or you can make the case that there's nothing, but you can make the case that this principle, this Chiddush, only exists by the Raisis and maybe doesn't apply to Drabbanans. But if you take the more of an Adam L'Chavero perspective, that I violate this Issa D'Raisa whenever I get somebody in trouble, whether I get them in physical trouble, I get them in financial trouble, I get them in spiritual trouble, so it doesn't make a difference whether it's a Drabbanan or a D'Raisa or whatever it is, that if D'Raisa, he has a problem upstairs now because he committed a Drabbanan, so I violated D'Raisa of causing him to stumble. The fact that his stumbling was of rabbinic nature doesn't really make much of a difference. And as some point out, it should be no worse than bad advice. And that's the whole discussion in Achronim, how that doesn't at least violate the second Lifnei Iver. If I tell him to violate Nesi Drabbanan, so then that's for sure bad advice, and I would be in violation of Lifnei Iver D'Oraisa. So why should it be any different if I help him to do a Drabbanan? It's a kasha some Achronim talk about, or Chaim Ozer is the whole truth about this, which also, in complicated ways, ties back to this initial question. We're almost out of time, and I want to recap what we spoke about. I'll just mention also, to close, one interesting position. It's an often quoted tshuva of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a discussion in which he kind of reminds us that I have to keep things in perspective. So there is a discussion in Poskim, which is very complex as far as modern life, that this really makes inviting people over for meals complicated. That it seems to be that an issue is raised by the Shulchan Aruch and later Poskim talk about, that if you're going to serve somebody food and you know that they're not going to make a bracha, they're not going to bench, they're not going to follow various halachas that are relevant, so it seems to be that that would raise issues of lifnei iver lo sitein nifshel. So that certainly makes things very complicated sometimes, and there's a big discussion in Poskim how exactly that's dealt with. It helps that brachos and washing and things like that are for the most part dinim d'rabbanan, and then the previous discussion of how lifnei iver interacts with d'rabbanans is helpful. Also the fact that people will manage to eat whether you invite them over or not, so it's probably not a d'oraisa to begin with. There's various discussions of how we deal with this issue. Rav Shlomo Zalman has an often quoted tshuva in which he describes a scenario where, let's say, you invite somebody to your house, somebody who's not observant, is going to come to your house, and it's 110 degrees outside, and he comes in out of walking for an hour to get to your house, and you're sitting there with lemonade and ice water, and you're all having a good time, and he's going to come in about the plot, and you're not going to offer him a drink. Why you're not going to offer him a drink? Oh, because lifnei iver, maybe he's not going to make a bracha. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, yeah, you're a genius. You're going to make sure that he's not going to violate not making a bracha now. He's also going to come out of there deciding that Fum Jews are incredibly cruel and that the Torah doesn't care about anybody, and he's going to come out. Right, you're going to cause all kinds of avarice, and you're probably going to cause him to reject the whole Torah. So one does have to keep things in perspective. You may have had a local victory of lifnei iver and that one bracha, but what are the consequences as far as lifnei iver lo sitein nifshel in the broader sense, and what other types of avarice can come out of that? So Rav Shlomo Zalman reminds us in that tshuva, that's something that has to be kept in perspective, that as much as the specific issue of lifnei iver is a concern, but there are broader types of lifnei iver that may also come into play if you're not careful and if you don't approach it with a certain type of seichel, and that's something that's worth emphasizing and remembering. So just since we are almost out of time, I just want to quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that in last week's parsha and yesterday's parsha, so we read this pasuk of lifnei iver lo sitein nifshel, and the implication is shocking. The implication is that we need to be told not to trip blind people with rocks. So Chazal tell us there are two other interpretations, not to give bad advice and not to help somebody with an aveira. So the question we wanted to know, we talked a little bit about the details about helping with an aveira, but the fact that you have to be crucial to the process, otherwise it's only a drabbanan, and the drabbanan called misayeya de over aveira, and then we talked about two different theories and what misayeya is. Is it lifnei iver midrabbanan, or is it an issue of not fulfilling the mitzvah of tochacha? And then we talked about the question of how do we understand these three prohibitions? Are they three separate prohibitions all tied to the same pasuk? Or is it one broad idea, don't take advantage of somebody's disadvantage in order to hurt them, whether it's physical, financial, or spiritual? And we discussed various ramifications of this question. We discussed the question I'm going to talk about whether you become an accessory to the crime, committing the same crime that person's committing, or are you doing something else? You're doing lifnei iver, but they're committing whatever crime they're committing. And we mentioned some ramifications for that. The issue of mumr for Shabbos, if you help somebody to mechal Shabbos, does that make you a mechal Shabbos? or does that make you free of that, but in violation of Mishnah Yivilo Sikhei Mechshel? How that seems to be in my focus, we're showing in the beginning of Masechta Shabbos, different interpretations of how you could have this scenario of somebody helping somebody to violate Hotzah and still not be in violation of Hotzah themselves, or is that necessary? And we talked about the question of Yehar V'Yavor, if you help somebody through Yehar V'Yavor, is that also a Yehar V'Yavor for you? Which is also Machlokas Rishonim in Sanhedrin and Afayin Dalet, and how the Ramah ruled that there is no Dinah Yehar V'Yavor in such a case, and that also reflects this question. And then we talked about Reb Moshe's Tshuv, about whether it's in a Ben Adam L'Chaver or a Ben Adam L'Makom. We suggest that also traces back to the question. But if we're dealing here with a Ben Adam L'Makom, so we're dealing here with a significantly different model than the physical model, and we have to say we're dealing with three separate prohibitions. And if we're saying that it's all one big model, then it would have to be viewed as a Ben Adam L'Chaver. And that would have a nafkamina for Mechila. You have to ask Mechila if you were a violator of Mechila L'Sikhei Mechshel. And we discussed how that could also get us into the Machlokas. The question of whether or not you can ask mechila at the cost of an os dvarim. So here's another possibility where an os dvarim may have to be involved, because you'd have to remind somebody of the avera that they put behind them. That's another question. And then we talked about the issue of the ad malachim, and the question of when do you violate the avera? Do you violate it when you give over the mechshol, or do you violate it only when they actually commit the avera, which has a much bigger nafkamina if the avera never gets committed? So then, do you dodge a bullet, or do you say, no, it's the mechshol itself which is the problem? Which brings us back again to our initial question. We discussed different proofs from the Gemara. On the one hand, the idea that lending money without witnesses is automatically harav yavor, regardless of what happens. Or the idea that a parent hitting their grown-up kid is automatically harav yavor, regardless of whether or not they hit back. On the other hand, the Gemara that says that the test that one wanted to give to a son to see if he'd get mad and disrespect him would only be lifting either if that consequence actually happens. A different rayas from the Gemara in different ways, all addressing this question of the Ad Malachi, which all traces back to this initial question of how do we understand the concept of Neiver L'Sitim Mitzvah. And then we talked also about the Emunah Shmuel's position, that you're not in violation of Neiver if the Avera doesn't apply to you. And that, again, only makes sense if you say that you join in the Avera, so if it doesn't apply to you, then maybe you're all right. But if the idea is not allowed to trip up the person, so then it doesn't seem to make a difference whether it applies to you or not. And we talked about what about if the person is violating an Issa Durabana, and so there were three views, but some say that you are in violation of Bufna Iver Midrabana, some say you're not in violation of Bufna Iver at all, and some say you're in violation of Bufna Iver Minatoru. We discussed how that also relates back that if you're joining in on the Avera, it would seem to be that at worst you're doing the Avera he's doing, but nothing more than that, so you're also doing it Durabana. While if it's about tripping somebody up in the broad sense, so then you could violate a Duraisa even if he's only violating a Durabana. And then that impacts on the question of brachos, the issue that's raised in the Shulchan Aruch and later Poskim, about offering food to somebody who's not going to make a bracha, who's not going to wash, who's going to violate different aspects of eating. So is there an issue with Na'iva there? We touched upon a little bit some of the ways of addressing that. We mentioned with Shlomo Zalman's view that if by not offering them food you're going to create a bad face for Judaism, you're going to get somebody upset and hate the whole Torah, so then you're certainly going to violate Neiva in a much broader sense, and that's something that we always have to keep in mind. So keeping in mind the broader picture of what's involved is certainly a crucial aspect, but in any event, this is both a very broad and specific idea which has implications on our daily life and throughout, and hopefully we should all be nizer and remember the end of the pasuk, Ani Hashem, that's the guiding line. Have a wonderful week.